Medical Matters.
20 minutes after 8 o'clock, and now recently a discussion by a discussion report by an NGO called Public Eye and International Baby Food Action Network revealed that sugar levels found in Nestle products for infants and toddlers in South Africa and other low-income countries violates global health regulations that aim to prevent obesity and chronic disease. And of course, this is going to have an effect on the dietary, but also health issues of these children in their adult life. And we are going to have this conversation with Dr. Chantal Witten, who's already with me on via Zoom to discuss this. Dr. Witten, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time. Great to talk to you again.
Good evening, Aubrey, and good evening to the listeners. Good to be back on 702. Thank you.
Much appreciated. So, first of all, just as a principle, so it matters the kind of food a child eats when they are even at their infancy, and it has some sort of a bearing on how they show up health-wise as adults?
Absolutely. We talk about the window of opportunity. And this is when children are from birth to the age of 2 years, it programs the future health of a child. So from birth to 6 months, as you know, Aubrey, I've always been promoting exclusive breastfeeding. So nothing but breast milk in those first 6 months.
We took your advice for my last one, him, for my little baby boy. For 6 months, he took nothing but breast milk. So, yep.
Yes, no, I'm super proud. We need more dads to be supporting moms and more families to be supporting breastfeeding. Because what it actually does, Aubrey, is that your mother's milk, breast milk, actually programs the child's gut. And we talk about the microbiome. So that's the gut environment.
Yep.
And the gut starts to program to the kinds of food it's being fed. So if you're feeding high sugar, then it programs the gut to want more sugar and programs the brain to send messages. So the gut and the brain are talking to each other. Now, breast milk is low in sugars. It has lactose. That's milk sugar. Where our formulas are being formulated with sucrose, which is sugar. And therefore, children want more sugar. So they are progressing from a formula then to a cereal, and then to noodles, and you can see kids just want to eat based on their taste buds. It's not always nutrient dense, and it's not always the best food. So it absolutely does matter what you're feeding your children, and early exposure is then translated into later health outcomes. And as you know, we have an obesity problem amongst children. And so in preparation for this talk, I thought it's important for us to understand that fat babies become fat children, and fat children become fat adolescents, and that feeds into fat adults.
And then, of course, there was this report by Baby Food Action and Public Eye, or International Baby Food Action, Public Eye, that suggests that the products produced by Nestle for infants and toddlers in South Africa and other low-income countries violates global health regulations. First, tell me about that. What sort of regulations are violated in this particular scenario? And what are the authorities doing about it, if that's the case?
Okay, so firstly, we have regulatory frameworks, which are both laws and policy guidelines that the industry needs to work and operate within. So unless you are having routine testing, so in our country, we have the SABS who does the testing. We have got the Consumer Goods Council that also does testing and looks at the products from an industry point of view. But then we also want, let's call it advocates for the public, who's protecting the public. Mm-hmm. And so we're grateful to Public Eye and to IPFAN, because IPFAN does pay attention to what the formula industry is doing. And so this report is based on evidence, scientific evidence by an independent lab that has taken samples. And this particular industry, I don't like to give free advertising, but this particular company is the major market shareholder when it comes to infant products. So from formulas to growing up milks, to cereals, to biscuits. They even want to sell baby water. And so Public Eye has taken samples and has done those tests, samples from Asia, Africa, and Europe. And what they found was that the global guidelines is to actually have less than 3 grams per 100 grams. So that's less than 3%. And some of the products in Nigeria were up to 6.5 grams per 100 grams, which is...
Sure.
Yeah, you know, outside of the regulatory framework.
Yeah.
South Africa has got very good regulatory frameworks, and routinely the formula samples are tested. I have not seen a report on cereals, but we do know how much sugar is in our formulas. And the public debate and the public health practitioners such as, the universities, they pay attention so that we can protect the public and particularly protect children.
So tell me a little bit about what the implications of this are. I mean, maybe just at this stage for South Africa, but for other low-income countries, what is the implication for future populations who would have consumed, or babies who would have consumed this these formulas, Chantel?
Look, Aubrey, it's not even about the future. It's right now. The public health problem is obesity. It's a global pandemic. There isn't a country on the globe that isn't battling obesity as a public health issue. And so when we talk about countries right now, is that children are paying with their lives right now because they're not eating quality foods. And this is no fault of mothers or communities, because these products are designed to be there for convenience. They are designed to be desirable. They are marketed as if you are making the best choice for your child. But actually, the reality is, and the evidence is, that it's not the best choice for children. And children are vulnerable. So children are growing right now. So when we feed them junk now, their health becomes junk. That's the equation. And our children in South Africa, we basically have a problem where 1 in 8 children is either overweight or obese. And when you are obese as a child, you're carrying a lot of comorbidities. You're tired, you have allergies, you can't play or run, you fall, you break your leg. So there are many, comorbidities.
Yes.
And fall out because of children's weight. So it's not just about an aesthetic issue. Children are paying with their lives when they are unhealthy. And for the adults in the future, and it's not a projected future when you're 50, we can see the projection of children from 1 to 3 who are overweight, and then what they look like between the ages of 5 and 9, and what they look like at adolescence. Our adolescent obesity in South Africa is above 60%. That's 2 in 3, especially carried by girls. Mm. And girls are the future mothers. And those future mothers who are unhealthy have unhealthy babies. And we have everything from preterm babies, premature babies, low birth weight babies. And those babies become, again, the unhealthy child. So it is intergenerational. And it's a poverty cycle. So it's health poverty. And we talk about health being your wealth. So if you already as a child have a condition like obesity, you literally in your health budget are in negative balance. You're in overdraft.
Hmm. I want to talk about something that many of us do. And I suppose it's part of the culture, I suppose. We like fat little babies. You know, we say they're cute, right? When a child isn't a little fat, we look at the mom funny and we say, why aren't you feeding this child? To what extent do we need to be aware of that kind of proclivity, that idea that a child needs to be chubby and fat and cute in order for us to understand ourselves to be the kind of family that really looks after our babies and our children? I'm saying this because maybe that too plays a role in our ignoring certain things around infant diet.
Absolutely, Aubrey, you hit it on the nail. But remember, who are sending those images of fat, chubby babies?
Mm.
What market marketing is out there, what media communication is out there, the fat chubby baby is actually the formula fed baby, both in marketing terms,
yes,
but also in reality. So in 2008, the World Health Organization had to run new data, do a big survey, a multi-country survey across Asia, Africa, America, and Europe, so that we could follow a cohort of babies that were breastfed exclusively for 6 months, who were introduced to foods from 6 months in a healthy quality diet from 6 months to 2 years, and we tracked their growth patterns. So you would know it now that you have a baby. We call it the Road to Health booklet, which is the growth chart.
Mm.
The growth chart from the 2008 cohort was significantly different to the growth charts that we were using from the 1970s, because the 1970s was actually based on an American population that was predominantly formula fed. And now we have the evidence that formula fed babies are heavier, have higher percentage body fat compared to the breastfed baby. So the breastfed baby is a leaner baby on average when you compare the two. And so we know that the formula fed baby is the overfed baby, the big baby, the chubby baby. But that's what you see in the adverts. So if you go back to the adverts of formula, thankfully in our country since the 6th of December 2012, you cannot advertise formula in South Africa. And we talk about formula that's targeting children up to 36 months. You can't put an advert on TV. You can't put an advert on billboards. So we don't see those fat, chubby babies anymore. What you should be seeing is healthy weight babies who are breastfed, and we are pushing this breastfeeding message. And South Africa has done very well. We have increased our breastfeeding rates, and the message is getting out there that breastfeed is best fed. So it's about the marketing as well, more than culture.
011-883-0702-021-446-0567. What are you feeding your baby? I mean, are you conscious about what goes into your baby's mouth? What do you say when you hear that some of the very popular formula that we give to our children is in fact too heavy laden with sugars, and that is going to negatively impact on your child's growth, not only as a child, but even as an adult. Their dietary sort of habits are going to be affected by the fact that you, as a parent, were giving your child food or formula that was too sugary. Give me a call. I'd love to take those calls. 011-883-0702 is the number. I remember a time, Chantel, when they used to have these baby contests or these pageants. And moms would bring their babies, and baby X would win the pageant because the baby was cute and adorable. And the baby was cute and adorable. But the ones that used to win those pageants would be the slightly fatter babies. And guess what? Now that I think about it, those little contests, those little pageants were sponsored by some of the companies that we are talking about right now. So the whole sort of strategy has been to get them young, yeah?
Absolutely, Aubrey. And I want to tell you a very sad story of this particular company. This particular company in the late 50s already started to fund what we used to call milk nurses. So they had lay women dress up like nurses promoting the formula in the clinics right here in Baragwanath Hospital.
In the 50s?
That's how crazy. Yeah, in 1950s already. So IPFAN is actually a large organization across many countries that was established to counteract the activities of a very insidious, a very unethical formula industry. And the market has been saturated both in the consumer space, but also in the academic space. So they are often, the formula industry funds bursaries, funds research, funds awards. The Community Pediatrics Award at one of our top universities was funded by this industry. So we call this in many other spheres captured, and we are being captured. The cost of that capture is actually children's lives. And that's why it's very important that we as academics are also discerning and that we are critical about conflict of interest. We cannot be endorsing a second-rate product as if it is the best for children, because it's not. And we can't have academia.
Do you think that these companies, and particularly the one we're talking about now, know that they are involved in this kind of unethical behavior? Do you think that they are aware of the fact that they are capturing a market in the way that you've just described?
Absolutely. I want all the listeners to please go and Google the Lancet series on breastfeeding. It was launched last year. We launched it at the University of the Western Cape last year with a project called the Infant and Young Child Feeding Advocacy Project. That project specifically focused on academia and health professionals, because WHO, the World Health Organization, had commissioned research in different countries. South Africa was one of six countries, and South Africa's data indicated that our health professionals could not tell whether it was marketing information or scientific information. Our academics think that the industry is putting out good quality research because it's cutting science, you know, cutting edge science. They have all the money. They've got R&D, which is research and development. And they hire the best researchers and they hire the best professors to endorse their products. We call this endorsement by association. So the fact that I'm talking on Radio 702 now is already an endorsement of Dr. Chantal Witten.
Sure.
It's the same thing. If I was on a webinar talking about a particular feeding product funded by the industry, it's endorsement by association. Most of our nurses go to what we call continuous professional development activities, webinars, seminars funded by the industry. The question is, why would you allow the wolves to look after your chickens? That's literally what's happening.
And I suppose there's another level of deception here that's going on. Because this is stuff that has to do with the infants, little chubby, adorable, cute little babies. The mind doesn't go to the place that says there's all sorts of skullduggery going on here. The mind doesn't go to a place that says there's all sorts of unethical, corrupt behavior in this particular space, because this is baby stuff. I mean, it's the last place that you'd look for criminal behavior. So I imagine that the marketing strategies for companies of this nature become that much more easily accepted because of the subject matter, or the vehicle with which the subject matter is carried, and that's babies, right?
Absolutely, Aubrey. I mean, you in the media, and you understand marketing ploys and deception. You have to keep as close to the truth. You slightly change it. We talk about economical use of evidence. And so what the industry has really done, which has undone parenting, is that they have made normal baby behavior, they've medicalized it. So we have a product for your baby because your baby cries. Every baby cries. So why all of a sudden is crying a medical condition? We've got a product for you if your baby burps. We have a product for you if your baby spits, postulates, you know. These are normal baby behavior, child development. Every child needs to cry. Every child will spit up. Every child would regurgitate. And we've made mothers so insecure that if you're not doing something about this and buying our product, our scientifically developed product endorsed by your, whether it's your pharmacist or your dietitian or your pediatrician or your nurse, then you're not doing the best for your baby. So the industry has really tapped into the psyche of mothers and parents to make them believe that they don't know what's good for their children, and make them believe that there needs to be a special product. We've specialized everything. And we've got these influencers. We've got really high-powered influencers who are telling moms out there that you need to use this product because they've been paid to promote the product. So it's like the snake oil of, I don't know, centuries ago. It's exactly the same thing.
Give us a call, 011-883-0702. Is that what you are feeding your baby? How do you feel about the fact that you might be setting up your child? Might be a little bit morbid here, but might be setting up your child for dietary failure in the future. How do you feel about the fact that the idea that a baby must be fat and chubby and cute, that idea is in fact against, I suppose, the natural way of things, the way that things should happen? How do you feel about the fact that we have been out-marketed, outwitted, and quite frankly deceived to believe that that is the ideal look for a baby, that a baby must be fat and chubby? I mean, I got to tell you, Chantel, that, you know, we took your advice. My little boy was a little bit of a lean boy. He's still very lean, but very strong, very, very muscular, very, very strong. But I remember the old women in our family were like, yeah, but, you know, you guys need to give the child some pop and milk, man. The child must be fat. And my question then becomes, how early, when did we imbibe this idea that a child must be fat and chubby? And so when did we, because the elders are the ones saying the child must be fat. Surely they should know that the baby's natural state is a baby that's lean.
No, actually, they don't have a reference point, Aubrey. Believe it or not, South Africa has never had more children breastfeeding than formula fed. We come from a background of where mothers were separated from their children, where they had to go and work out, you know, had to leave and go work in towns,
yep.
Had to leave and go work in the big leafy cities. And so they had to leave their children with formula, or they had to leave their children with Oma meal ball in the bottle. So we come from that background. So we don't have a normative lens on what healthy children look like. Then we've got this culture that if you're overweight and you're a little bit on the plump side, then life is good. Life is great. We saw this during HIV. Nobody wanted to take their be lean, because if you were losing weight, you were, you know, you were associated as being HIV infected. So obesity has been idolized. Obesity has been normalized. And unfortunately, with the epidemiology right now, the stats right now, it is not the norm to be on the lean side. We have more overweight women. In fact, South Africa has one of the highest obesity levels in the world. We have more than 60% of our women who are overweight or obese. So that's our normative. I don't know if you've seen any of this media pics of the new mannequins that are advertising clothes. They've upped the sizes of the mannequins to reflect the population. I'm on the lean side, and I often get questioned about, well, you're not eating very well, you know, you're not eat. I'm like, I have a PhD in nutrition, so I do know what to eat, and this is what a healthy body does look like. And so the pressure is because actually the normative has shifted towards the far right. We are on the heavier side. We are not healthy bodies, and we are paying the consequences for that. We are paying with very high levels of diabetes. We are paying for very high levels of hypertension. I have colleagues who have just turned 40 and are on medication. And I keep saying, you just need to lose weight, and then you wouldn't have to be taking these meds every day. But people are very hard to change their eating habits. And I'm not slating gyms now, but we're punting gyms. To eat a muffin, which is going to give you 400 calories, you need to exercise for 4 hours. I don't think anybody can exercise for every muffin they're eating. So if you're eating 4 muffins a day, that's 16 hours. So you can't exercise it off. What you really need to do is pay attention to what amount of calories you're putting into your mouth. What is the quality of the food you're putting into your mouth? I mean, The standard snack for most of our adolescents coming from schools is the kota. And
Yes.
the other day, I had to give a comment on the kota festival and idolizing the kota. And somebody challenged me and said, "But this is our culture." And I was, "No, this is not our culture. We did not have kotas when the human race came into being. We were right here. Homo naledi was found. We did not find evidence of kotas. So can we not talk about culture? We have evolving culture, yes. But we have in our townships and in our areas of poverty, people have to make do to make food stretch. The only way you can make food taste nice, Ubi, is if you add fat to it or you add sugar to it. If I give you one potato and add a teaspoon of mayonnaise to it, and I give you 10 potatoes on the other side with nothing on it, you are more likely to choose that one potato with mayonnaise because you make a decision with your taste buds. And that's our problem.
But Chantal, diet you propose is boring, man.
I'm proposing long health and longevity. I understand, and I think it's about how we communicate our healthy messages. I think we must talk within the context of economics, both in terms of money, what it costs to buy a healthy diet, but also in terms of our nutrient literacy, our food literacy. The average South African cannot distinguish what is healthy food and what is unhealthy food. One, we don't have a food literacy program in South Africa. America has got Eat Right America. We've got Eat Right India. And in South Africa, we're still not there because we don't have a public health nutrition program that communicates what is good, healthy eating. So in the context of the work that I do with child feeding, if you ask moms, what is a healthy food that you would spend money to buy for your children?
Well,
And I'm talking about moms.
let's put it out there. Let's ask that question.
Let's ask moms.
Yeah.
Yes, please, let's ask.
What is the question?
The question is, if you had to make a choice for a healthy food that you would buy for your child, what would you spend your money on? And I'm talking about toddlers between the ages of 2 and 5. If you were to buy one product, what would you buy?
Give us a call, 011-883-0702. What would you buy, Mom? Give us a call. I'd love to hear from you. Let's read you some of the messages that have come through. Taki the
Okay.
tutor says, "Hi, Aubrey. I would argue that most food companies, including retail stores, should be compelled to package food and drinks with clear food traffic labels stipulating salt, sugar content. Those companies that flout the law must be held to account." My issue, Taki, is that even if they did, would you know what you're reading? See, I probably would agree with you that you should have all of those things, but I don't know if that information makes any sense to me, given my ignorance about nutrition and what should be in food and what shouldn't be in food. So I think it's a good start. I think it's a good idea, but I think a greater deal of education about sugar content, how much sugar content should be in food, and sometimes as Chantel is saying, we make decisions on the basis of our taste buds. If it don't taste nice, I'm probably not going to buy it. So it's a real educational process that we need to go through. I mean, a very intense educational process. Would you agree, Chantel?
Absolutely. And I want to take my hat off. Firstly, I want to say the South African Department of Health does have what they call food legislation or food labeling. So we call it front of pack labeling. And it does have the robot. It will talk about sugar content, fat content, salt content, and also artificial sweetener content. And so if you see the red robot, you know you mustn't take it. But for the listeners, something that's very easy that you can make a judgment on, read the label. If the label has ingredients and the first three ingredients either has salt, sugar, or fat, usually the fat is vegetable fat. And that's because most of our products to make it taste nice and make it crunchy usually uses vegetable fat. Then it has too much. If it's in the first three ingredients, it's too much fat, it's too much sugar, or it's too much salt. So you don't want to have a product that has one of those three in the top three ingredients. That's the easiest way you can make a decision. The second way to make a decision is if there's a food or a snack that you really like, take a piece of tissue, put your snack on it, and leave it on the windowsill. And if you come back and there is a fat mark on that tissue paper, then it's too much fat. Don't eat it. That simple.
Let's take some calls. Keith is in Ethel. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Aubrey. A question for your guest. So breastfeeding, the way to go, I agree.
I've been keeping to test these snacks.
Sorry?
Go ahead, Keith.
I say breastfeeding, the way to go, 100%. Okay. Yep. Unfortunately, not all women can produce milk. So the next option is to use, let's say, baby formula, which, but correct me if I'm wrong, your guest doesn't seem to be too keen about. So the question is, if a mother can't produce milk and some baby formulas are unhealthy, as you just mentioned, in terms of high sugar, fat, or salt content, what do you suggest mother feed the babies?
Thanks very much, Keith. Chantel?
Aubrey, I'm sorry, I didn't hear Keith's comment. You'll have to repeat it for me.
So there are moms who can't produce milk, Keith says. Indeed, as you suggest that some of the formula has too much salt, too much sugar, or too much fat. What do you suggest then moms should do under those circumstances?
So for the listeners and particularly for Keith, moms who cannot produce milk at all is less than 1%. Therefore, 99% of our moms can produce milk, but they need to be supported. Lactation support, it's not instinctive for moms just to be able to breastfeed, because breastfeeding is a skill and it's a behavior. And the problem is that we don't have good mentors, even in our family circles, for a breastfeeding mom to have support within the family circle from somebody who's breastfed, because breastfeeding is not the norm. Therefore, breastfeeding needs extra support, extra motivation, extra encouragement. And making it normative means it's a whole of society. We need more posters for breastfeeding. We need more spaces, particularly in malls, particularly in public spaces. If a mom wants to sit and breastfeed, there are very few spaces for moms to actually breastfeed. And no, moms can't go to the toilets to breastfeed. That's not where we want our moms breastfeeding.
No, that's unacceptable. Sure.
Yeah, and for that 1% of moms who can't breastfeed, then the alternative is formula. Formula was designed particularly for children who were sick and separated from their moms. It was designed as a medical intervention. It was never designed to be a public health consumption food. It was designed by doctors in a medical facility so that children in medical facilities separated from their moms could actually have an alternative.
So we've normalized eating medicine.
Absolutely. We've normalized eating medicine. When the company that we are talking about started to promote its formula. It's called formula because it's formulated. It's not milk. It's a formula. When they designed it, it was a medical intervention and they got doctors to endorse it. And what has happened now at a public health level is that it's become, the medical intervention has now become normalized at the preferred feeding option. You ask moms, why do you use formula? They will tell you because it is scientifically made. It is doctor endorsed. All the pediatricians that I interviewed during the research for the University of the Western Cape, all the pediatricians believe that formula was better designed to improve child health. That's how crazy the situation is.
Yeah, I want to take some more calls. Richard is in Randburg. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a nutrient-dense health food and beverage business, so I'm not going to mention names, but I found that a lot of the parents, moms and dads, quite like the dry horse for their kids, so it's giving the protein and the fat. And you've got to watch out. If you go to retail outlets rather than getting the pure stuff, they add sugar to it. I do game. I try not to do any beef because it's injected and full of grains, which are inflammation causing. But you'll find that there's even full of like cereals and there's sugar in it and there's, so you've got to read your labels. I actually picked up a packet at a big pharmacy chain today and it's 30% beef in it. It's got cereals, it's got sugar. And I was just, you know, eat pure. That's probably the, and I'm just, what I'm reflecting here is I'm seeing a lot of parents buying the dry balls for their kids.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Richard. Let me speak to Bruce in Milder's Drift. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Pravit.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
The question for your kids, I wanted to find out how safe are biofortified foods. I think they are fortified with vitamin A. And is the country actively taking up biofortification, or maybe she can educate us more on that?
Thanks very much, Bruce. Biofortification, Dr. Whitten. Are we? Do we have programs in this country related to that? And maybe a comment on Richard's call?
Aubrey, again, because I'm on Zoom, I'm not privy to what the callers are saying, so I'll respond to the biofortification.
Okay.
It's not as big as we have in other countries, but we do have a product that has been bioengineered specifically to enhance the vitamin A content, and that is our orange flesh sweet potatoes. One of the frozen food producers has an orange flesh chips, and that is highly, it's got vitamin A. So if you're not only eating it as a chip to replace your potatoes, but you're actually improving the nutrient quality of your food. So please do enjoy that. The problem is with the biofortification, it's about getting the right specimens that can grow in the South African climate, that can grow in the South African context, for it to deliver the micronutrients that it should. So this is plant-based, and it's enhancing the plant either in its content of micronutrients or its ability to carry micronutrients. Mm. So we do have that.
Refiro Nicholas Randigwa says, we are living in times where profitability is prioritized over quality of life, says Refiro. Guinevere says, it happened that my baby wouldn't latch on, and expressing was not a long-term alternative because there was enough milk. Was stressful, but formula was an option in the end. I get what Keith was sharing, says Guinevere. I suppose, Doc, you're stepping on a lot of our convenience religions here, right?
Yes.
We've all been converted to the religion of convenience and ease, and you know. And what you're suggesting is that we need to re-look at the cost of that convenience versus our health for our babies, but also for our health as adults as we grow older. And I can see that it's a very, very difficult thing for folks to swallow. How do you get us to buy in?
All I have to do is ask everybody that's listening in to say, do you know somebody who's a diabetic? Do you know somebody who is hypertensive? My personal experience is that I have lost somebody because of cardiovascular disease at a very young age. And it's important. It really is important when we talk about quality of life and we're talking about children, is that we must make the best investment. For the mom who talked about the stress of expressing breast milk, I personally was working, I was leading an NGO, and I had to express milk to feed my baby. I did that for 6 months, but I had a very supportive environment. Moms can't do that when they are hungry. So we have a high level of food insecurity in South Africa. So we are putting a lot of pressure on women who are already struggling to put food on the table for themselves and for their families. So I get that. I understand that. I'm calling on government. I'm calling on media. I'm calling on whole of society, is that if we put children first, then we have to make the investments. How can we allow formula companies to post billions of rands of profit when we know it's costing children's lives? Not only now, South Africa's child health profile is an overweight child who is too short and is cognitively stunted. That's what our profile looks like. And our companies are posting profits against that profile. And the profits are not only now, the profits are also in the future. Because believe it or not, those same companies are investing in industries that relate to obesity. Weight Watchers is shareholders are those same companies. Special products for dieting are those same companies.
Dr. Whitten, we've completely run out of time. How do people get in touch with you if they want to continue this conversation with you offline?
Aubrey, I'm at the University of the Witwatersrand in the Division Community Pediatrics. So they'll find me as chantal.witten@wits.ac.za.
Thank you so much for joining us. Very, very important discussion.